Most of us know each other through the voice that speaks to us or that we use to talk to ourselves all day long. It is so intimate, so irrevocably us, that we really don't pay attention to it very much. It's the source of some of our pleasure and joy in the world, but mostly it's the source of a lot of suffering. In a way, it's an expression of our disappointments, our expectations, our frustrations, our doubts, our hopes. And it's talking all the time. It's so present in a way that we just are unaware of its power. So we simply live our lives in an endless dialogue with an unconscious, complicated, narratively driven self. That is, in a way, looking for something every day, probably every minute, that might be called fulfillment, happiness, contentment, but it rarely brings us that. Mostly it brings us disturbance, annoyance, hostile feelings, and the word feelings in that is very important because it programs or manipulates the feelings in us. So the self that we seem to know is in a way verbally directed by our thoughts and mind and experienced mostly as feelings that are somewhat unable to distinguish themselves from the power of the voice that's directing us. So we live in this kind of knot of self. And, you know, you look in the mirror in the morning and you go, oh, or whatever you do, oh, you know, I mean, you all have your momentary greeting of yourself. And it's as much verbal and emotional as anything else, but often it's dismissive. It's like, oh my God, you know, I mean, if you get to my age, it's, oh my God, you know, and you can't quite believe it. Or how do I maintain it? Or how do I make it better? How do I come across to the world? It's an endless kind of presentation of you and the world around you. And you try to figure out, how do I manipulate and dialogue with whatever's about to arise in the day, which always is going to be something or nothing. Still a dialogue with nobody called me, nobody's on the phone, nobody cares, nobody's interested. Or why do they treat me like that? How do I get around them? What do I do? It's, you know, structural manipulation of life in the world. And, you know, we're not good at it. Most of us are not good at it. And we don't know how to get out of it. But the teaching, one, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, which begins to be turning the equation away from you, trying to make others in the world important and not making you the primary or sole focus of your attention. Others are important. Caring about others is important. And if you begin to do that, it starts to change the equation to a degree that allows you a certain amount of freedom from being endlessly obsessed with yourself. And that is really what most people are obsessed with. The me, the my, what will happen to me? Where will things take me? Where will they go? Why me, God? You know, all that stuff that kind of drives our life second to second. you turn that attention and you start to think about how can I be nice to somebody else? Interesting chemistry change. Now, you may have to figure out who that person might be, or maybe they're right in front of you and that makes it a little easier or harder. But whoever is in front of you is yours. Rudy's great dictum to me was, if it's in front of you, it's yours. He taught me that with a wrapper on the ground that he bent down to pick up while we were walking. And I went, why did you pick that up? He said, if it's in front of you, it's yours. Well, it's not always a wrapper. Sometimes there are people living with you, people who come into your life every day, and they are so repetitively there that they're just dismissed as part of your own psyche, your own dynamic. So you have a fixed feeling and a fixed verbal interaction with them all the time. That's not great. And it creates a lot of repetitive patterning. It creates a lot of false sensing of who you are. And it needs to be broken. The chain needs to be broken. You need to break the patterns of your day-to-day life. And it really has to start with recognizing this voice that is defining you moment to moment to moment, looking at it. And the problem with looking at your voice or your noise in your head is that you are going to look at it with your mind. So the mind is creating this thing, and then the mind is witnessing this thing, and the mind is the problem. So it's locked in to this vicious cycle of repetitive stuff, analyzing yourself, worrying about yourself. How do I get out of myself? How do I do this? How do I do that? And you're stuck. Most people are stuck in a drama of their own making, and it's not fun. It ain't, it's, you wouldn't watch it on Netflix, I'll tell you that. So you really have to begin to figure out, how do I change that? And one of the ways to do it has to do with leaving the mind for a while. If you're lucky, you've expanded your mind enough to be able to see through it and see it as a larger part of the universe. But if you're not there, if the mind isn't shining bright and letting you see yourself clearly, move down to the emotional space of your heart. Yes, I know the heart's affected by your mind, but often it has more independence than you think. And you can move down into this area of your being, the heart chakra, and you can breathe into that and start to feel instead of cognate. Experience the world as an emotional space. Now, yes, there are a lot of repetitive patterns even in that. But if you can just feel your way into it and breathe into it and do Rudy's exercise of ask for help to surrender, you will feel this thing start to open and leave the realm of the familiar relationship to everything around you and find this otherness, which is deeply you. And as you start to feel what I call the invitation inward, suddenly you are no longer the victim of a verbal, mindful, even emotional story. You're just a stasis, a quietude, a deep, quiet, available witness to your own life. And it's not preformed because in the space in your heart, it's in the moment. And if you stay quiet, it reflects the stillness of something eternal. That's the great thing about meditation. It's the great thing about spiritual practice. If you go into these deep spaces inside you and get quiet, they take you out of the noise of your day-to-day mind, your day-to-day life, and they put you in touch with something infinite and beautiful. If you can do that, you will find it is restorative. It brings you into a new state of dialogue with yourself. So that instead of being the complaining, annoyed, frustrated, hopeful, disappointed person that you so often may imagine yourself to be, you will find that you're like, huh, I'm okay. I'm okay. It's all right. Doesn't have to be more than that. It doesn't have to be massive. It doesn't have to be you find yourself to be godlike and spiritual and awake and anointed and all of that. It doesn't have to be that. And, you know, if it gets to that, we'll have another conversation because it's fine to get to that. But if you own it, it's problematic. But if you become awakened to this simple, breathing, sweet truth of you, it will inform the rest of your life and will take over after a while your day-to-day experience with everybody around you. You will start to be nice to people. You will be kind to people because this thing will make you look at them as wondrous beings, in a sense, as lovable beings. I know we look at most people around us with an enormous amount of sort of cognitive dissonance and, oh my God, why don't they stop that? Why don't they become this and do that? That is not a good, joyful way to live. If you can look at everybody as someone who has suffered, struggled, is trying to do it just like you are, cares about the world, doesn't do it well, but they're working at it. If you could have some empathy and sympathy for everyone around you, this thing would open and your experience with others would not be critical. It would not be noise filled. It would be open and loving and attentive and caring. Even if that doesn't come back to you, your experience of doing unto others will fulfill something deep in you and make you comfortable with you, with who you are. It's really exquisite practice to be nice to others, to be kind. And then there's the other side of that coin, and it's really important. Try to be kind to you. I'm sure you've heard that before. But if you're practicing this with others, well, why not practice it with you? Be nice to yourself. Stop beating yourself up. Stop being critical. Stop being disappointed. Stop thinking it should have been different or other or whatever it is. Stop going through the histrionics of all the stuff that's ever happened to you in your life, because something has happened to everybody in their life. Well, lots and lots of stuff has happened to all of us. And if you hold on to that and you weave a network of sort of a sensibility of self, you are going to be stuck in that reference thing over and over and over until you're boring to yourself and boring to everybody else, and you don't have any opportunity to move beyond. It's really frustrating. The human dynamic without an inner journey, without a touchstone of something deep and beautiful is really condemned to a kind of ongoing suffering. And you see it all around you in most people that you know. There is a profound suffering. And if you're, you know, in a teacherly mode, but let's just say a human mode, and you want to help somebody like that, love them. Love them. Do your best to love them. And I'll bring up another thing that's kind of came up to me online. I'll show you a picture. So beautiful. This is a thing about touching infants, but let me just tell me if you can see it, because I don't have a picture on my screen. Can you see that little baby?
Yeah, I can see it.
Great. That to me says everything. One, that's how you first viewed the world. And if you're lucky, that's how you will end your vision of the world. That's how you will enter into the next space. And this is a come from an Instagram, something about touching infants, just touching them. And that's a reaction of a baby being touched. Do you think that you're any different than that? Do you know how you would feel if somebody came and just did that to you and that? Can you imagine the comfort of that? You know, if you're not into some sexual thing of, you know, touch often goes into that realm, which is not a bad thing, but I'm trying to go into the infantile, just touch, touch. Yes, you can touch yourself. You can go to a massage parlor, I guess. You have maybe partners who can touch you or you can be touched by. But touch is phenomenal because it creates this enormous, that baby's look, that look. I mean, it's so beautiful. And to remember that part of yourself, and when somebody hugged you, when somebody lifted you out of the cradle, which I've been talking about for weeks now, that experiential space doesn't go anywhere. You go somewhere. You start to turn it into story. You start to turn it into when they didn't come and what they should have done and what they didn't give you for dinner. And I mean, all the crap that goes into the mind that builds a self that talks to us every day, and we don't even hear it anymore because it's so familiar. But that's the self that's in the way of our joy and our happiness. The road back is be nice to yourself. We can't all do this to ourselves or even to others, but we can do something which is very common in human life, which is hug. And a real hug is really meaningful. And you may not have time to hold on to a person because we don't do that in our culture, but if you hug deeply, there's a beauty in being hugged and in hugging back. Not in hugging like, oh, I love you, I love you. That's horrible. That is beyond horrible. Hugging is this. It's really feeling and really caring. And if you can bring a hug to another human being, that's touch. It's real feeling. And of course, one of the things that you can see that I have been learning over time, and it's really potent, is you can touch without physically touching. This mudra work that I do is touch. It doesn't connect to your body and your skin and your mind in a way. It just goes deep, penetrates. It goes somewhere. It is a touch that is phenomenal for me because I get to feel what it's like to touch and hug every part of someone's being. And I also have, and this is really important, an inner connection to something directing me, telling me to do that and where to go. Where you each, in a way, need to be hugged. And each of you are different. Each of you are different. I'm different. We all need to be hugged or touched in a particular way, a really good masseuse or a really good a person with great gifts of understanding another soul knows how to go out and touch. Physical touch is not always possible. Emotional touch, always possible. You can sit with another person. I do it even at lunch. People don't know, but I'm sitting there doing this little tiny little thing. And it's sending so many vibrations and so many energies and feelings of joy to the person I'm sitting with who has no clue, usually, that they're being fit, they're being nourished and they're being fed by something way beyond the lunch they're eating. We all can do that. You all can do that. You're all gifted. You may not be using your gifts, but you all have them. You can go out and touch the people around you physically, metaphysically, emotionally, reach out and just feel quietly, simply, this sense of connectivity to another soul. And I'm telling you, what that soul wants is what that little baby wants, to be touched. It just wants to be touched. And that touching is a connection, and it takes the two in the experience of our lives and makes it into one. Singularity, the self. Moving into the self, finding your way into oneness is the glory of the human experience. It's what we're here for. Finding oneness with each other, finding oneness with ourselves, because we can be as divided in our being as we are with others. So finding oneness, finding self, finding the of that little baby. That's a gift. That's a real gift. And it's a gift we can give to others. It's a gift we can give to ourselves. And if you don't do it, it's welcome to the human race. It's a lot of a lot of people suffering because nobody's taught them, nobody ever opened them up to the doorway of that kind of knowledge. On the other hand, if you're initiated through pain and suffering and grief or whatever, might find that knowledge. If you have found your way to the meditation and spiritual life, it opens you up to that space. But many people don't find it. And they live lives of quiet desperation. You don't want to do that. You just don't want to do that. So your job, if you want to do it, love yourself, open yourself, be nice to yourself, be kind, and then turn that into others and do unto them as you're trying to do to yourself. And you will begin to experience. I'm talking from experience now, so this is interesting. Moment to moment, day to day, joy. You know, I don't want to claim ownership. I don't want to claim longevity, and I don't want to claim, a permanent state of being. But I will tell you, there is a directive coming at me that is so strong, and it is so much pushing me in the kind of the teacherly mode in a way, but more as a teaching, putting me into the human space. And it's just saying, moment to moment, serve this function. Be good. Be kind. Give. Make yourself available. Don't listen to the noise in your head. Don't get caught in the drama. Be still, and I will be present. I will be, and will be is a future tense, so that's wrong. I am present. And I cannot tell you it is an exquisite sense to wake up to how present this is in every one of us. And all I want to do is make you, the other, aware that this is happening even as we speak. It's a sweetness. It's that little baby's face. It's like all day long, all day long. And I can't emphasize it enough. It's like, it doesn't matter what happens. You take it as a gift. It doesn't matter what you're seeing. You open to it and go like that. There's a sense of thank you, of saying thank you, which I do. I go thank you all day long. And I think I'm ending my talks generally these days with that same idea. But if I can implant it at all, the idea of discovering honest gratitude for your day-to-day life is, in a way, the gift of a spiritual journey, of this going in and finding the thing that has been there all along. And there's nothing new about what I'm saying. Any teacher you listen to over the course of history will just say the same thing. We're all here to find this thing that has been there since the moment we were born, and somebody touched our forehead and we went, oh. You can keep doing that. You can do it now. You can do it now. That's all I can tell you. So this is the work. This is the practice. This is what we're here for. Find that awe, that simplicity, that joy. It's not gone anywhere. It's you who've gone somewhere. It's you who've gotten lost in your own story, in your own mind, in your own history of whatever it is your history is of, you know? And life is not easy day to day. We all know there's stuff that happens, you know, every day something happens. You cut yourself, you fall, you bump yourself. I mean, there's pain in life. There's stuff that happens. But boy, oh boy, if you add that to the narrative of 50 years or however many years you've got, 80 of them on my side, you just create an awful, awful narrative. No need. Moment happens, open to it, learn from it, pay attention, go forward. Get rid of your story or simplify your story or look at it at least as a story. You do not have to be lost in it. You can be the masterful storyteller. Become a poet. Become a poet. Write your poetry of your life instead of, the stuff nobody wants to hear. Anyway, I'm becoming endlessly aware of my capacity to go on infinitely, and I'm going to stop. But I really do love you guys, and I really will repeat these things. And there's no judgment. I know how hard this is on some level, but it is the work. that Rudy called it that. It is the practice. It's how we get ourselves to a place of being grateful we're in this world, that we got born, just like that little baby. Show you the picture one more time. This is us. So, any questions? I have two screens here, so I'll have to flip back and forth. If you have a question, raise your hand, I guess. Okay, Wendy. Wendy.
Thanks, Bruce. So when you're recognizing that the mind's kind of in control, or there's an absorption in that space, is your first approach, you know, other to breath, or bringing your awareness below the navel, or you're doing like Rudy's double breath? Like, do you think just recognizing it is how do you take that little journey?
Well, the thing I've come up with, and I sort of repeated it earlier days, it's just, I go, nope. The voice starts to do, blah, 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 blah. I go, nope. Very quick. I don't have to spend time doing stuff. But, you know, I've been getting headaches, and I've started to lie down and just use my touch. I just go into the headache. I don't go away from it. I don't try to get rid of it. I just go into it because it feels purposeful. I don't know why. I just go in it and I just move myself around in my own head. And I start to feel this beauty, this strangeness of physicality, this amazement of being. And the headache kind of goes away. It's not exactly about getting rid of the headache. It's just not. It's not just taking a Tylenol and wishing it was evaporating. It's like using it. And there's a lot of pain and feelings that we have in ourselves that when you go toward it gently and move in it without mind, without analysis, without anything, just kind of feel again, experience, wow, it just speaks to you. And in a way, it may go away. I have had that happen. The headache just completely goes away. But it proves to be attracting me for a reason. Negative thoughts, all the stuff that goes on in the mind is there for a reason. Just feel your way almost molecularly into that space and just go, what is that? Or you can just go, nope, not going to do it. Because whatever arises has eons of time to manifest. It's not just happening. It's history. Your history, everything goes into it. But if you want to begin to break down your history and your reaction to your history, just go, nope. And it goes away. It may come back a minute later.
Thank you.
You may have to go, nope again, but that's life. Okay.
Thank you, Bruce, because I do what you do for headaches, but I didn't think of cross training that over to overthinking or emotionality. Really, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Anybody else there? Yes, Shelley. I don't hear you, but you look great.
Thank you, Bruce. I just unmuted. My voice seems to be all about logistics. It's not negative. It's not positive. It's like da-da-da-da-da-da. It's just really all the things to do or how to do them. The emails I need to send, I don't know. It just goes on and on.
I get that. I do get that. I have that too, but I have it as a directive. It's a quiet directive. It's not a noise directive, and I don't turn it into speech. But, you know, as I'm getting old, it's really interesting because in the bathroom, if I skip one step, I'm lost. I cannot remember what the next step is. I have to like rethink everything. But when I do the things in a certain kind of order, I feel like, oh, thank you. It's like, oh yeah, that. Okay. It's like a knowing that happens rather than a intellectualizing or noise making thought process. It's this guiding thing. And I go, you know, why is the universe caring if I put the toothpaste cap back on now? Why does it care that? I will tell you, when I put the cap back on the toothpaste, I feel like It feels good, you know, and then I do the next thing. I wash my hands and the soap feels good and the water feels good. And I turn off the water. I remember to turn off the water. Of course, everybody thinks that's natural. But at a certain point in life, you can get distracted from that kind of thing. And the water's running. You go, why is the water? And then you have to go turn it off. But there's a directive internally that gets you through putting on your clothes, putting on your socks, going downstairs, making your breakfast, doing all the things, and giving Mark a kiss. You know, there's all these things that happen, you know, in life that make us live our journey. And my experience, for whatever it's worth, is it's no longer a verbal thing. It's a kind of inner movement. It just, and I go, and then I also go, I mean, there's a real thank you because I am forgetting stuff, you know, and it's really great to be reminded. And all these things start to happen. And it's so beautiful. It's just so beautiful for me. And you know, there will come a point in time where your day-to-day life will not be as demanding, you know, and that's part of the incredible thing of aging, where you don't have to go do this and go do that. There's like nothing to do. And then your mind is going to go, you know, what does it do? Where does the mind go at that point? And that's a really scary moment for the mind. And that's a retraining. And if you can start that training now of just quieting it down, going, I got it. Yep. 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 Thank you. Okay. Fine. Just enough like that. You'll be a lot. It'll be prettier and sweeter than it is being in charge of the dilemma of day-to-day life, which is boring. It's just boring. And your mind already has it down. You don't have to think about it at all, mostly. Okay? Does that help at all? I don't know. That might be too simplistic. But I do know that every one of us, it's really interesting because I look at everybody and I can sort of get a sense of how their minds work. And we're so different. We're very similar on a certain level because the mind is doing it all, but we're so different in where our fixations are and what we think of as important. It's not, we just have to get it quieter, simpler, trust the journey. It will guide you. My greatest joy in life is guidance, being guided, you know, and paying attention and doing what I'm kind of told to do. That's really helpful. And then there's no dialogue about it. There's just serve. And it's also, again, be kind. If I can do something for Blanche that she will not expect, or that will be like take her coffee cup and get her more coffee or wash a dish that she should have washed or could have washed, it's joyful. It's joyful. And you just keep doing those things and the universe will fill you up with opportunity to be nice to somebody, and especially to the person you're living with or nearby. Mark will be very grateful for all of that and vice versa. You know, it just works that way. And it's so simple. So simple. And kindness, just what it does in the end is you live in an environment that's full of kindness. And you're like, wow, this is a nice place to live. Okay. Anyone else? I got to change pages for a second to see if anybody's doing this on another, raising hands on another page. Anybody on this page? No. Okay. Thank you. Next week, we're in New York, and in person and Zoom. Thank you all for being here. If you have an inordinate need to have a class next Sunday, even though you're from the West Coast or elsewhere, sign on at 8 o'clock in the morning. It'll be there. Okay. And truly, thank you all for coming. I mean, this stuff wants to be spoken, and you're such a wonderfully receptive space for it to go. So I appreciate it, and have a great week or two.